Chapter 5. Spiritual Path in the Social World. The morning fog had cleared. The surface of the bay was silvery in the gleam of the sparse rays of sunlight that broke through the dense cloud-cloaked sky. To the left, a mountain range stretched along the horizon line. Water-worn boulders were piled by the narrow shore. Looking to the right was breathtaking, with a sense of boundless wide-open space, which gave rise to peace and harmony in the soul. The guardian of knowledge and his students camped on the shore, not far from the white tent that had been pitched there. This time, the group was relatively small, about 20 men and women who were keeping their eyes on the master. They had gathered there in order to absorb the pure energy of the place of power and to touch the truth in the conversation with the sage. Many were concerned about the interrelation between the social world and spiritual development. Each student had many questions to ask the great master. The first question was posed by a very young woman with dark skin, high cheekbones, and slightly slanting greenish-brown eyes. "Beloved guardian, my concern is this. Should I tell my loved ones about my studies on the spiritual path?" she asked, and gazed reverently at the master, awaiting his answer. His eyes met hers, and he shook his head. "No, Samira," he answered unequivocally, and began to explain. "One shouldn't tell everything to everybody. Imagine that you have received something, an energy, for instance. If we tell everybody about it, the energy dissipates and disperses. So, we lose what we've got." Samira listened to the master and asked with a distinct emotion in her voice, "Do you mean we should never tell anyone at all?" "But," she stammered, "you have always said that we should try to awaken people, to show them the way to knowledge. One should tell people in such a way that this energy does not dissipate but multiplies," smiled the sage. "How do we do it?" Samira continued the dialogue excitedly. "You have to find like-minded people who are ready to follow the spiritual path. Then we have to get together and do spiritual practices. Then the energy that we received at the seminar will begin to multiply. When many people do spiritual practices together, they can form a very strong energy field." "Are you talking about a circle of prayer for the world?" Another student, a young woman with soft features and deep, light gray eyes, interjected. "Yes, Polina," the guardian nodded. "The circle of prayer and other similar practices will allow us to create a large field of energy, and then it can help us. If we just received something and are in a hurry to tell everybody about it, then we will spend this energy and have nothing left for ourselves. So we have to save and conserve this energy." Polina lowered her eyes for a moment to collect her courage for the next question. The guardian noticed her doubts and looked at her warmly, sending a ray of encouragement, and the woman spoke again. "You know, when I first started learning at the school, I told my relatives and my beloved husband about it, but..." She paused and was silent for a moment, as if remembering how it all happened. "I did not have their support, but rather received only condemnation. These are my closest and dearest people. Why is this so?" "Because our relatives take it as a danger signal," the sage answered with sadness in his voice. "The alarm signal that tells them that their relatives are getting out of control and becoming different, and they are not happy about it. Why are they no longer complying with our norms? Why have they decided to be better, more perfect, brighter, kinder? What is this? That's bad. We all live in a swamp, and so should they. They start thinking about how to influence us, what to do to make the person become like everyone else again, and stop doing some things that they don't understand and therefore think are bad. They are afraid of these things." The guardian of knowledge finished and looked around at his students. His eyes stopped at Polina, and he added weightily, summing up what he had said, "That's why you can't tell your relatives anything." "Master, but, for example, my husband spoke so heartily. I'm the closest person to you, you trust me. Tell me everything, I'll understand you," Polina said, and sighed with regret. "I believed him, and it turned out to be a stumbling point in our family. And he poured out so many nasty things on me because of these classes. If I had known that this would happen..." Polina began to speak in broken sentences, worrying. "But I wanted it to be better. I thought how great it would be if he understood. I dreamed that we would take classes together. The woman sighed deeply again, and her voice trembled a little, revealing a strong emotion.
Yes, our relatives often want to appear so kind and good. Talk about trust and understanding, the guardian replied in a deep, even voice. But as soon as they hear something that goes beyond the norm, no one understands anything anymore. Because they don't want to understand and see what it is. They are determined to do only one thing, to see if their loved one is deviating from the norm or not. That is what worries them. If one deviates, then they should take measures to make the person again become a zombie like all the others and live again a meaningless life filled with sufferings, imaginary problems, and negative emotions. That is why you should not tell everyone about the classes and seminars. As soon as you tell them, condemnation, negativity, and conflicts begin.
Yes, Polina picked up on the idea. In my case, it was like this. My husband told my parents, and they were frightened. They called other relatives and even the neighbors, she shook her head ironically, and they all started to teach me morals, saying that I was doing the wrong thing, how much I had to listen to. The sage looked at his student warmly and compassionately. This is what many people do to bring a person back to their zombie state, he said softly, stating the fact, and you cannot expect understanding from them, for they are not the sages to whom we have come for knowledge. These people cannot comprehend the truth and the longing for spiritual development, because they have formed labels for everything. For them, to understand is to label. For example, those who practice yoga, wushu, sacred dances, and astrology are sectarians. They put one label on everything, and they think they already understand everything yoga, astrology, or tai chi is. People have been practicing and studying these ancient sciences for years. Those who don't practice can't get the point of all of this sacred knowledge, but a person has figured it all out in a minute, because they found what they think is the right label to put on it. Then they begin to condemn. These are sectarians. This is all obscurantism. Then someone else says something on TV, and that's it. The processing begins. When the master had finished, a broad-shouldered man in his 40s, with a neat short beard and a weathered suntanned face, raised his hand. Master, I wanted to tell you a short example, he said in a low voice. When the sage nodded approvingly, he continued. There was a guy in our group, a very young guy. So he told his family that he was taking classes and doing spiritual practices. After that, he disappeared. He didn't show up for one class. He didn't show up for another. So we decided to find out what had happened. It turned out that his father really didn't like what his son was doing and started to beat him up. Oh my God! What a horror, emotionally exclaimed the red-headed student with two mischievous braids. But that's not all, the man continued the story. When the guy decided to resist, his father grabbed a pot of boiling soup from the stove and poured it over his head. That's how the boy ended up in the hospital, and now he has severe burns on his face. There was indignation, empathy, and disgust on the faces of the students. Some of the women even shuddered as if they had felt the pain firsthand. How is it possible? Samira burst out her arms. To ruin his own son's life. And why? Because the son was beginning to develop spiritually? Yes, the father turned out to be very aggressive, concluded the master, and he was very angry that his son deviated from the norm. That is why such revelations can be dangerous for life, the sage said when the students calmed down their righteous anger. Most people are ignorant because their souls have only reincarnated from insects or beasts. That is why they react to everything with aggression. First, there is fear that someone deviates from the norm. And then there is the animal reaction. To attack. Beloved Master, how do you know? Who can we tell and who we should not? Polina asked with feeling. What if I tell someone? And this person thinks I'm some kind of sectarian. Before talking about spiritual studies, you have to check whether these are like-minded people or not, whether they even understand what you are going to tell them about.
start telling them in a roundabout way. You can say that it's not you, but someone you know went to do yoga, and then see how the person reacts to this. If they start saying, "This is all nonsense. Why do they do this yoga? It's trash." Then there's no need to tell this person anything, because they are not able to perceive this information. So if this person who does not know the essence of the matter and does not practice anything already starts to judge, it means that it is useless to talk to this person, Polina clarified. "That's right," the sage nodded. "If we start telling them something, we lose energy." "In the best case, right?" the suntanned, athletic-looking man asked again. "And at worst, it may be fatal." "Yes, Ruslan. Unfortunately, it is true. A person is filled with negative energy. When we tell just anyone about what we are doing, instead of multiplying the good energy that we have collected after the seminar or spiritual practice, we receive a lot of this negativity from them. What kind of energy can they have if they are disposed to judge everything and to see only bad things and to label everything?" The guardian looked questioningly at the students. "Certainly not love and grace," Ruslan replied. "It would rather be a dirty energy of condemnation and bitterness." "We may lose all the light," added the sage. "That's why we need to test a person. First, you should tell them what you have heard about the training from your friends. Then you have to gauge their reaction. If they speak positively, I wonder what it is. Where do these classes take place? Go ask these friends, and I'll go and take a class too." "Then this is a positive person. It means they are attuned to spiritual development. You can slowly start telling them simple things. And again, continue to observe their reactions." "Master, what can I tell them?" Ruslan came forward with interest. "Probably, it would be better to start from the most basic." The guardian of knowledge nodded, confirming the student's conjecture. "If you reveal many truths at once, it would seem strange even to an open-minded person, because they would be too unfamiliar with them. For example, if you say, 'Your relatives in the past life were simple animals, insects. Therefore, they think only about how to eat, sleep, and satisfy their physical needs, and nothing else interests them.' It may be hard to understand and accept right away. If we say something like that to such a person, the person may not perceive it."
"Because it is too high a level of truth?" Samira asked. "Yes, that is why it is better to start with simple things that people can understand. For example, tell them that we are zombified by television. If the person keeps showing interest, then something more can be revealed. If the person seems to show interest at the beginning, and then they lose it very quickly, do they stop believing? What should we do then?" Ruslan asked. "If they are afraid of a little truth which is revealed to them, then it is already impossible to tell them the truth. For example, one shouldn't tell them that many souls incarnate on the earth from insects and beasts, and that's why they are so ignorant and react to everything so aggressively. It is still too early for them. You can start by giving them a book called Mystery, An Untold Story of Love, or Life After Life. After that, again, you have to see how the person reacts to it. If they are still interested, then you can tell them more. If they say, 'It's complicated,' or 'It's about the dead, I'm afraid of them,' and start to shut down, it means they are not ready for that." "Does that mean that they cannot develop further and learn the truth?" Ruslan asked again with obvious regret. "Such a person can do yoga, for example. Maybe sometime they will be ready to go further," the sage answered, and, after a moment of silence, glanced at the seagulls circling above the water, which were now and then making muffled cries. "That is why everyone must be tested," he concluded, "and the truth which you have received must be protected. The energy also has to be saved and not wasted." The master had drawn a line under all of what had been said. For some time, the students sat in a pacifying silence, looking at the infinite surface of the bay and pondering the information they had received. Finally, a tall, graceful woman in her 30s with pleasantly curved features and long, golden, honey-colored hair raised her hand. So far, she had followed the conversation attentively, but now, pulling her thoughts together to ask a question, she met her gaze with the master's. He gave her his approval, and the woman spoke in a melodious, smooth voice. beloved guardian. When students attend their first seminar, they receive a lot of energy, but they don't understand anything yet. They are overwhelmed with happiness, and they want to share this state with the world. What do they need to do to conserve the energy and the truth they have gained? The sage listened carefully to the woman's question, interlaced his fingers, and started answering. Julia, to the new students, we should explain that there is a special magical principle. You should say it in such a way. You were given the energy of happiness and joy at the seminar, so keep it and take care of it. Don't try to waste it immediately. Remember, if you share this energy with a person who doesn't understand you, who reacts aggressively and judges you, then this energy will dissipate immediately and be replaced by the negative energy of this person. Why do we need that? It is better for us to store this energy, to accumulate as much as possible so that it starts to transform us. And if the energy has just appeared and started to transform us and we have already told everyone about it, then consider the energy as gone. Even worse, it may have been replaced by a dirty energy of judgment. Then you immediately feel bad. Your good mood disappears. Why is that? Because you told your close ones, your relatives, who supposedly should understand everything, but actually can't. Master, is it like envy? Julia asked. If you bought some beautiful thing and started to show it to everybody, then people would be jealous. Yes, it is like envy, the sage confirmed. When we talk about our spiritual path, we receive negative emotions from people who are not ready and do not want to learn the truth. That is why we should not pour everything out of ourselves. First of all, you must test the person. You may tell them that it is not you, but someone that you know who practices meditation. Observe the reaction of the person. This will help you understand if you should tell them about everything or not. If they have turned into some beast, then they will judge everything. Everything will be bad for them, and only aggression will come out of them. You don't need to tell something to such a person. You need to explain this to the new students as well. Julia nodded, showing that she understood. You know, my grandmother used to say, "Hide the meat under the porridge. Pretend to eat porridge without meat, then they won't be offended. They won't think ill of you, and you'll be better off," she shared. But I didn't expect this principle to work so broadly.
Your grandmother must have been a very wise person, smiled the guardian of knowledge and nodded in the direction of the auburn-haired woman with the little wrinkles around her eyes.
Master, our students often say that their relatives and husbands understand and support them, she began her question, but only at the beginning. Over time, when the deviation from the norm becomes a little more evident, when they already go to retreats, the relatives begin to pounce on them. How do you identify in that case, at the very first stage, whether they will support or clamp down on a person?
Sophia, this is exactly the situation in which you should tell your relatives and friends not about yourself, but about someone you know, the sage patiently explained. You can say, "Here, a friend gave me a book to read," and see how they react to it. No need to hurry. First, tell them that someone has begun to engage in spirituality, that it is someone who has deviated. There are few people who are seeking knowledge themselves and are determined to understand. Otherwise, they would have already started saying that they want to do yoga and are interested in it. So it seems that if a person has never been interested in spirituality, they are not able to understand and accept what their family does, Sophia asked again, in order to get as much insight as possible. If people have never been interested in such things, how can they understand us? The guardian answered calmly while looking at his student keenly. Why should they? If they could understand us, they would already be wondering about something more, moving somewhere, wanting to learn something new. That's why you don't have to rush and tell everything, he concluded. It would be much easier, and it would help to avoid many problems. The sage finished speaking and looked attentively at his students, waiting for new questions. Meanwhile, a slim, young, blonde woman with a short haircut, which so successfully highlighted her graceful neck, raised her hand.
Beloved guardian, how do you learn to control your sexual energy? She said, looking questioningly at the master.
When the level of energy increases, I have thoughts that I need a man. She smiled embarrassedly, lowered her eyes for a moment, then immediately hastened to add, "But I understand that I just want to drain the energy instead of directing it to the higher. How do you deal with that?" "Yana, if we have sexual energy, we should rejoice," the sage answered softly, slightly lifting the corners of his lips in a reciprocal smile. "It means we have a good vibration. It means sublime emotions and creativity can appear." "Oh, so that's why people often write poetry in their youth?" Polina asked. "Because there is a lot of sexual energy?" "Exactly," the guardian confirmed, and began to explain in detail. "Puberty occurs in youth, and sexual energy arises. That is why creativity often manifests itself in young people, singing songs and writing poems. We should appreciate the energy of sexuality. It is the most delicate energy that a person generates in themselves." "What if a lot of sexual energy is accumulated in the genitals? Is that bad?" asked the tall, skinny young man, who was the closest to the master and closely following the conversation. "Vadim, you have to see. If a lot of sexual energy accumulates in the genitals and it starts to bother a person, then one should rise it higher and direct it into the other chakras, to start to create, to dance, to study something useful, to practice spirituality. It is very good to cultivate the sublime emotions using this energy. Then you will feel good." Vadim bowed his head, thanking the master for the clarification. Meanwhile, Yana raised her hand again. "Sage, tell me, is it very bad if one wishes to find a man?" She hesitated, trying to find the right words. The guardian of the knowledge looked at her without condemnation. On the contrary, there was a surprising calmness and unconditional love and acceptance in his gaze. "If you want to find a man, he must be worthy," he answered. "You do not need to waste your sexual energy on the first man you meet, on the one who will come up to you somewhere on the street." "Should we not meet people in the street?" Samira was surprised. "Who can you meet on the street?" The master asked a counter question and continued after giving the students some time to think. "Hardly any respectable man goes about in the streets and makes advances to all women. Imagine, for example, a famous pop singer, Justin Timberlake, walking down the street and starts talking to you. Or a businessman, a politician, a lawyer." Listening to Sage, the students began to look at each other. Women even laughed. It was obvious that the topic resonated with them. The students were recalling their previous experiences, comparing them to how it should be. "If someone comes up first, we should be worried," the guardian of knowledge continued. "What do you mean he was the first one to come up? It means he's not all right. Maybe he's some alcoholic who can't afford a bottle, or some weak man who no one wants because everyone pushes him away. In any case, a man with a low level of energy comes up first. A buffoon, an alcoholic, a domestic tyrant. It is important to understand that if a woman did not choose the man herself, did not make any signs of attention, and he came up to her, began to get acquainted and declare his love, this means only one thing. His energy level is lower than that of a woman. Such a man will not be able to give you anything. He will, on the contrary, drag you into a pit where he is. Guardian, but in society it is believed that a man should always make the first move, that he should win the woman." Samira spoke emotionally. "And you say it must be the other way around?" "Yes, society has accustomed us to think that a man chooses a woman, and a woman should be glad that someone paid attention to her. But in reality, a woman must make a choice. It is she who gives a man an opportunity to feel her sexual energy, to attract his attention herself. When this happens, he will make further steps. But we were taught the opposite. Someone who first came up to you and said the three magic words, 'I love you,' is your prince. This is an illusion, a stereotype that they instill in us." "Where should a woman look for a decent man?" Samira asked. "If not in the street, where then? In the environment around her, her friends, colleagues at work?" The sage shook his head. "No, that's not the right approach either," he began to softly explain. "And a very common mistake. A woman often looks at the men around her and immediately imagines a relationship. For example, she works as a nurse in a mental hospital, and she is surrounded by mentally ill people. So, she begins to choose among them. She looks to see which of them has less psychosis, which of them is less sick. It's a very bad habit.
But if a woman has no other options?
Samira continued to ask questions. Suppose she spends most of her time at work, and then she goes home, and again from home to work. Where does she find a man then? On dating sites?
First of all, we need to understand what kind of environment we are in, the sage replied. That one should not choose among the mentally ill, and worthy men do not just walk on the street either. But there are decent people. You just don't meet them because they gather in another place. You need to understand where exactly, and to enter their circle of communication, you have to choose among them, not among the mentally ill.
The master paused, looked at his students, and continued, summing up what he had said. If we are in an environment where, for example, a famous singer meets with his friends, it would be different. But if you're sitting in a cheap bar, then whoever comes up to you will, by default, be unworthy. Whatever the environment, that's what people are like. What a pity that mothers don't teach their daughters that. Sophia sighed with regret. So many problems could have been avoided. Divorces, unhappy marriages, toxic relationships. The guardian nodded.
Yes, that's something mothers don't teach their daughters, he affirmed. Although, well, they are supposed to teach selectivity, that you shouldn't throw yourself at the first person you meet, that you should look for a decent man. But in most cases, the teaching is completely different. Rejoice in anyone you meet, the first one who comes up and confesses his love. That's why there are divorces, unhappy lives, suffering, all because of these lies. That is why we must be very careful. If the man comes up first, it means something is wrong. But if you have chosen someone, then everything is correct. You have to have found a place where worthy men gather, made an effort to be among them, and then join them and attract their attention. You don't wait for someone to come to you first. But master, it's not so easy to get a successful, worthy man interested, is it? Yana stared questioningly at the sage. He smiled with his eyes, sending his student rays of kindness and love. Yes, we must develop ourselves, become successful, improve ourselves, increase our level of subtle energy, and then we will be able to attract a truly worthy man into our lives. Yana responded with a look of gratitude. She thought over his words, looking into the distance, at the silvery smooth surface of the bay. Her eyes glowed with awareness. It was obvious that there was an active thought process going on in her head at that moment.
Beloved guardian, she said at last, that's what I want to ask you. It appears that, in order to attract a worthy person, one has to represent something of oneself, for example, to achieve success, career growth, and development in society. It's our ego that helps us to achieve that. But didn't you say that we should get rid of ego? It always gets in the way of the spiritual path. What is the right way to understand it? Are ego and ambition related? The woman stared at the sage inquisitively, waiting for his clarification. Ego doesn't always help one to succeed, he said. It helps if you are brought up properly.
What do you mean by proper upbringing?
Yana did not understand.
What do you mean?
For example, a person was brought up this way. You are a descendant of Genghis Khan. There were never any weaklings in our lineage. Our people have achieved everything. Don't you disgrace our family. If such attitudes are given to a child from childhood, then the child's ego will lead to something since it is filled with strong attitudes. The ego is a person's idea of themselves. And what does one usually tell a child in our society? The guardian addressed the question not only to Yana, but also to all the other students, glancing at them and pausing for a moment.
Quite the opposite, as far as I understand it, Vadim said as the answer floated in the air.
Right, the master nodded. Usually a child is not told, we are descendants of Genghis Khan, do not disgrace our lineage. They don't say, we had famous great people in our lineage. Many get the opposite attitude. We only have simple working people, insignificant people, in our lineage. We never had any luck in life. What's the point of doing anything? It won't work anyway. Nothing will work out. It's better to keep your head down. Why do you need it all? A weak state is cultivated, and the child gets the idea that they are some kind of a wimp, that they can't achieve anything. A person starts thinking, "Why do you have to go somewhere? Those rich people are doing some nonsense, and we will sit quietly in the corner." That is, such an ego is formed, and nothing can come of it, because there are no strong attitudes. In order for a person to achieve something, they need to have strong attitudes. Master, how do these strong attitudes work exactly? Vadim asked. A person just isn't afraid to act? Is that why everything works out? If a child is told that there are no weaklings in their family and everyone achieved something in life, they form a constructive personal plan on how to achieve their goals. Today, they take the first step, even a small one. Tomorrow, there will be the next step, and the day after that, the next step. That's when a person will achieve something. It is not even about the ego, but the strategy of a person. Most people have such a strategy. They fantasize about being rich someday, for instance, but do nothing to achieve this. That is such a strategy. In their fantasies, islands, castles, palaces, expensive cars, and in reality, a person sits on the couch, is lazy, and does nothing. They only dream. It appears that a person with such a strategy will not achieve anything, even if they have an ego 3 times bigger, Vadim asked, catching the master's thought, because they do nothing to achieve anything, and you do not dream of success. You have to make certain steps. Yes, you have understood the point correctly, the master praised his student and continued explaining. A successful person does not dream of islands and castles. They think this way. Right now, at this moment, what can I do to reach my goal? And then they develop a plan and take the first step. Then they achieve everything, because they divide the big goal into small tasks that they can accomplish today, now, in this moment. They take the first step, and they start to move forward. That way they will achieve a lot. So you have to look not at the inflated ego, but at what kind of strategy is used. When the guardian of knowledge had finished speaking, Julia raised her hand. She tucked a copper golden lock of hair behind her ear, and gathering her thoughts, began to speak. "Great one, I have a question," she began in a melodious voice. "You were just explaining to us about strong attitudes. Isn't it the same as positive thinking? There are all kinds of motivational training all over the place these days. Different coaches, all trying to pump you up. Their essence is this thinking. Do not doubt anything. Focus on the main thing. Start doing something. You are sure to succeed." Can't that kind of thinking hinder a person? After all, if one doesn't doubt, one won't understand what difficulties await them. The woman looked questioningly at the master, waiting for his comments. "Julia, it is very good that you brought up this subject," he said. "Indeed, there is a great danger, and positive attitudes must be treated with caution. This way of thinking can also be disturbing. A person thinks positive thinking, and they run off to do something. What can they do? Everyone's first thought is that they have to get a lot of credit. The person thinks that if they have a lot of money, then they can do something, start a business. So the person takes loans, but they do not think through how and what they will do. They did not see the difficulties and obstacles. As a result, they spent the credit money on everything but did not start a business. So they wonder how to pay back the loans. What is the right thing to do? Vadim asked. We have to have a balanced way of thinking, the guardian said confidently. On one hand, we have strong attitudes, but at the same time, we see the situation realistically and soberly. We see what obstacles and difficulties are on the way. Beloved master, explain then. The same student spoke again, looking at the sage with respect and awe. How it is possible to achieve something if there is no money? If you say you can't take credit. But I don't understand. Because in our world, any business requires an investment. A kind mischief flashed in the guardian's gaze. Never think that everything can be done only with money, he explained with a mysterious smile on his lips. In fact, everything is done with intelligence. Imagine what would happen if you give a bag of money to a mentally ill person. The sage paused and looked at his students, waiting for their answer. Sparks of light merriment shimmered in his eyes again.
I guess they won't be able to manage the money properly, Sophia said quietly.
They just don't understand what it is, Vadim suggested.
They'll play with it like a piece of paper, Samira added.
The sage listened to all the versions, and the mischievous glint in his eyes increased.
That's right, he said. Tomorrow we will come, and they won't have the money anymore.
Why not?
Because they started playing with it. They tossed them up as if they were ordinary pieces of paper.
The master pictured exactly how a mentally ill man would do it, tossing imaginary pieces of paper over their head and watching them whirl around in the air with a mad look. They would say to others, "Look, papers, papers fly. Oh, what fun!"
Continuing to play a mentally ill person, the sage began pointing at imaginary banknotes spinning in the air. It looked so funny that the students laughed merrily. The master had such an infectious smile and easy way of talking about everything that it was impossible not to be inspired by the positivity and optimism in his every look and movement. People started coming up to them, asking for money, and they scattered the money all around them and then watched as they jumped around and collected the same pieces of paper. It was a fun game for them. So the person was given a sack of money, and the next day they didn't have a sack of money anymore. The sage kept laughing with his ayahs and looking at his students with a cartoonish gaze.
What was their problem? Why did they run out of money so quickly?
They had no intelligence, Samira answered, smiling as the answer seemed too obvious and at the same time logical to the extreme.
Exactly, the master confirmed. And if one has a strong mind, one does not start with money, but with a clear step-by-step plan. It may turn out that no money is needed at all. One thinks up such a plan, by which they could move slowly, by small steps, without any special expenses, but still achieve great goals.
Why is it that they didn't need the money?
Because they have a lot of intelligence.
So it appears that you should think not about having more money, but about having more intelligence, the woman asked, amazed at the conclusion she had just made.
The sage confirmed her idea with a nod and a kind smile. If we don't have a mind, we won't be able to manage the money, even if it comes. We'll end up with nothing but credit and no money again. But when we have a lot of intelligence, we will see how many things we can do even without money. In order to have a mind, one must constantly learn, develop, and improve. Satisfied with the master's explanations, the students digested the information for some time. The master did not rush them, looking at the seagulls soaring high in the sky, giving the students the opportunity to form new questions. After a couple of minutes, Sophia raised her hand. It was obvious that she wanted to ask about something very important that would help her learn and comprehend the truth.
Beloved guardian, I have a question about development, but in a slightly different way, she began in a deep, sonorous voice. Tell me, how does the soul evolve? The book Life After Life says that Ian's brother is in an insect's body. How is it that he was first a human being and then he incarnated into an insect? Where then is the evolution of the soul? Shouldn't it evolve from the simple to the complex? Why was he first a man and then an insect, and not vice versa?
There was an intelligent insect there, the master gently explained. The book described that an insect civilization was formed. After all, God created so many forms of life, different kinds of aliens, intelligent insects, the world of lucent spots. There are the most unimaginable forms in which life takes place. God looks at each soul and sees that such a soul needs a certain experience to develop further, because perfection is an infinite experience.
Does it mean that God sees what experience the soul needs? The student asked.
Exactly, the guardian confirmed. God sees everything and thinks, it would be better for this soul in this incarnation to be an intelligent insect and in the next, an alien. That is how God puts the soul into different forms of life to gain experience. When the soul has gained enough experience, its life in the physical plane ends and the life of an angel begins.
Sophia bowed her head, thanking her master for the explanation. In her eyes, not only understanding appeared, but also sparks of curiosity flared up with renewed vigor.
Beloved guardian, she began again, But why did God not make it so that people on earth would live in peace, so that there would be no suffering, so that people would not hurt each other, would not fight? The Master looked at the woman with the gaze of a sage who knows the most sacred secrets of the universe. "It is always hard on the physical plane," he said. "Even if you take a situation where people live in peace and harmony, there are still diseases, accidents, and old age. That alone is enough to make it not easy. If you add disasters and cataclysms, even without wars, you get a lot of negative factors that complicate our lives. When we go to the subtle plane after death, that's where the situation is completely different. Because there, our eyes are opened, and we see clearly. We begin to feel that God is around us. In the subtle plane, we start to communicate with other souls, to see their thoughts. If there is any desire, it will immediately materialize. It is a completely different life." "Why do we need the physical plane then?" Samira asked without hiding her surprise. "God must have created it for a reason."
"Not for nothing," said the Guardian of Knowledge enigmatically. "When God created the angels and they lived for a long time in the ethereal world, they were not as wise as they could be. Then God thought, they need to experience not only joy and grace, but also other things, suffering and anguish. When ignorance is all around and a person is reaching for knowledge, this is why this physical plane was created. It is difficult to live in, which is natural, because it is a trainer for the soul."
"So our whole earth is a big gymnasium?" Polina asked with a smile.
"Yes," confirmed the Guardian. "And if a person wants to avoid going to the gym, then they will not gain the necessary experience, and therefore the soul will not develop. If in this life one hid behind an exercise machine instead of training, or lifted plastic children's dumbbells instead of normal ones, then how can one train? How can one become strong?"
The sage looked at his students with attentive and testing eyes, trying to understand if they all were involved in the conversation and assimilated the knowledge given to them by him.
"One can't," Ruslan said, joining the conversation. "If there is no exercise or the exercise is too weak, then it is impossible to build up muscles."
"That's right. One will not train. In the next life, one will be sent back to get the experience one needs. So we have to use these simulators here for the soul to become wise."
"Master, how to use this gym properly?" Samira asked, hesitating for a moment, wondering if she had phrased her question accurately.
"To use the gym properly means to fight one's lower nature," the sage answered with calm confidence. "Suppose, for example, a grudge arose, and we, first, exaggerated it, laughed at ourselves and entered into the grace of God, began to pray, began to do laughter meditation, and instead of a negative state, positive emotions arose. Does that mean that we have passed the lesson correctly?" Samira clarified.
"Yes, that is correct. It means we did the right thing when faced with the simulator of resentment. The point of the gym is to deal with resentment, envy, and fear, to get out from under that influence. That is when we can say that the gym is properly used and the lesson of God is learned."
"What if we don't learn this lesson?" Polina asked, looking intently at the sage with her deep gray eyes. "If we are caught up in lower influences and they have completely enslaved us, then God thinks, when will they get tired of it? When will they tire of resentment, of anguish, of suffering? When are they going to start getting out of it all? Doesn't God help a man to exercise on these simulators? God only begins to help when a person begins to understand what the problem is. That one has to stop being a slave of this world, that one has to get out of this slavery and become an angel. Then God looks at the soul and decides that maybe it does not need to incarnate anymore. That's it. The soul became developed, spiritual. Then it goes to the higher world."
Having listened to the sage, Julia raised her hand. "Beloved Guardian, thank you for explaining it so well," she said, glittering with sparks of awareness in the depths of her eyes. "And while we were talking about resentments, I remembered one question that many women in classes are concerned about.
How do you get rid of resentment and feelings of loneliness and envy of the happiness of married couples? The master looked thoughtfully into the distance, choosing the best words to make it clearer and easier for the students to understand. As a child, I watched my parents, and all the time I noticed how they fought with each other, how negative they felt, how they offended each other. I looked at my neighbors, at other relatives, and I realized that the same thing was going on with them. Constant conflicts, quarrels, and disagreements. So one day I asked, "Mom, why do you and Dad live together if you fight all the time?" And my mother answered me, "Well, you have to have people living together. You have to have a father to raise you too. Everyone lives like that, because that's how it's done." I asked again, "But why do you need it, if you're not happy? If you argue all the time? There's always something wrong with you. You're fighting. Your neighbors are fighting. What's the point of all this?" "So what is it?" Samira asked eagerly when the guardian paused. What did she answer? She couldn't explain anything, except that it's the way things are. It's the way things should be. The baby should have a daddy. These are the stereotypes she began to instill in me, answered the sage with a faint sadness in his voice. So, one should not envy happy families. In fact, such families are very rare. If you ask people where they have seen a good family, they will think about it and say that they have seen it in a movie or read about it in a book. It's not easy to have a good family. Why do you think that is? The sage ran his gaze over the focused, attentive faces again. Because no one taught you how to create it, Sophia answered confidently, and there was a hint of regret in her voice. Yes, exactly, the master nodded. They don't teach us at school how to make a family. They don't teach us that at university. Our parents don't know anything about it either, so they make a poor family themselves. No one teaches that, but everyone tells others, get married, maybe you'll be lucky. It turns out that creating a family is like playing roulette. Maybe you'll be lucky, maybe you won't. Chance will decide. Master, what's the right way to create a good, strong family? Polina asked. So, it doesn't have to be roulette? There should be a deep understanding of how to choose a partner. It should not be the first person you meet, but a worthy one. We've already talked about this today, and it's very important. No one teaches you how to find a worthy person, how to find a place where worthy people come, how to get acquainted and build a relationship, what a harmonious family should be like. What do you have to do for this? No one teaches this either. When I studied this question deeply, I saw that the most harmonious families live in guest marriages. Guest marriages? Samira could not contain her emotions. The other students also looked surprised. Yes, guest marriages are the best ones. Even scientists have proved that, the master replied with unwavering calmness and confidence. Imagine, spouses come to each other on weekends and holidays. They are in harmony and happiness because they meet to have a good time. They enjoy communication and intimacy. Then they go their separate ways until the next weekend. That's when everything is just perfect, because they're not going to argue with each other about who does the cleaning, who takes out the trash, etc. They don't have domestic problems, so they live beautifully. That's how it used to be in the East. There was the female half and the male half. The spouses didn't meet very often, so there was a normal relationship between them. When people spend too much time together, you start to have arguments, conflicts. You get fed up with each other. You get irritated. Master, isn't that not only true of relationships between a man and a woman? Ruslan asked. There is a saying, you should meet good friends less often. Can this be applied to any relationship? Right, the sage said. Because if you stay too close to good friends, you slowly start having quarrels, problems, and conflicts. This way, when you meet good friends, have a good time and go home. The guardian of knowledge finished and looked around at the students, waiting for more questions. He saw that everyone remained engaged and actively participated in the conversation, although some did not ask questions, but only listened attentively. Now one of those students, a woman in a modest blue headscarf, raised her hand. She did not have a striking appearance, and one could even get the feeling that she purposely did not want to stand out. At the same time, just a glance at her revealed that in her soul, there was a powerful energy of femininity and kindness. "Dear Master," she said, "can you tell us, please, how can one remain undisturbed in the social world? How do you stay awake and continue to bring goodness to so many women? It's easy to do it in the seminars because the energy level is high. But then you come home, and everything is lost."
"Maria, the energy level is lost if you start telling everyone about the classes," the sage gently reminded her.
"You come back from the seminar and various old habits and patterns of behavior start to kick in. You should think like this. Why did I feel so good at the seminar? Because I had a lot of sublime impressions. That's what replenished me, gave me a state of happiness."
"Then you have to look where you can get these impressions."
"Do you mean divine impressions? High emotions?" Maria specified.
"Yes, one has to listen to spiritual songs. They give the right state. So that no one questions or judges, you can do it with headphones. If they ask what you are listening to, you should name a popular song. You also need to read books and watch sublime movies. You need to nourish your soul with ascended experiences, constantly doing spiritual practices as much as you can. All this will help you tune in to the sublime emotions. One should think how to help people, how to bring them light. Such thoughts will also lead to many positive impressions. The more sublime thoughts we have, the more sublime impressions the soul receives. Then you will feel good all the time. You will be in a happy state all the time."
"What if bad states arise?" the student asked again. "How can we fight them? How do we overcome them? If there is negativity, envy, irritation?"
"You need to look at what causes bad states, to try to trace the reasons," explained the sage. "The reasons are all similar. We watch TV again. We watch soap operas, shows, commercials. It all zombifies us and gives us wrong attitudes. The second reason is difficulties with relatives, conflicts, rejection. You come home and live together with them in the same apartment, as if in a jar with spiders. Everyone wants to change you, to put their own opinion in your head. But in fact, this is just the opinion of society, stereotypes, and social patterns. People have such a wrong relationship in the family, because one imposes something on the other. Then both people have negative impressions of each other, irritation, and other negative emotions. That's how the soul gets soaked with these bad states. That is why it is necessary to try not get involved in all that. It is necessary to stay away from it all, to think more about sublime impressions, about how to help people, how to bring people light. Then life after the seminar will be happy, joyful, and full. Sparks of inspiration and enthusiasm appeared in Maria's eyes.
"Beloved guardian, thank you very much for these explanations. You speak, and in the same moment everything clears up in my head, as if it is arranged on the right shelves." She smiled with sincere gratitude, and, after a little hesitation, added,
"Tell me, please, how do you learn to hear your spiritual part and always follow your soul and the hints it gives you?"
"The soul is bound to God, bound to the guardian angel," answered the sage.
"What do you think he can speak to us through?" Maria thought for a few seconds.
"Through sublime emotions?" she suggested with a part of doubt.
"That's right," the master affirmed. "When something happens, the voice of conscience whispers softly, 'Do this, do that.' It means that an angel or God is warning us, but we often ignore it, because the devils cry out loudly in our ears, 'Don't do that, be offended, envious, irritated.' We listen to the voices of the devils because they are louder. But we should listen to our heart, conscience, sublime emotions. They come from God. If people listened to sublime emotions, they would live in God, in happiness. Yet people listen to the loud voices of devils and demons. They shout at us as they want us to experience negative emotions. That's why people live miserable lives." After receiving the master's answer, Maria looked at him with gratitude. Her gaze was even more clear and pure, reflecting the bright light of the soul. Their gazes met, and the sage realized that the student wanted to ask about something very important that bothered her.
"Great guardian, can every soul become an organizer and then a mentor?"
The woman spoke a little uncertainly at first, but with each word she became more and more calm and inwardly harmonious. Can every student grow on the spiritual path if they believe in themselves and in the Force? Or only those students whose souls need to grow? Why doesn't everyone become organizers and mentors, even if the Force tells them to? Because not everyone can open themselves to the influence of the Force, the Master smiled wisely. To begin with, everyone has to think, what influence am I under now? The person begins to conduct the influence they are under through themselves and into life. As they say, who's the one you got that from? Or, if you have to live with a beast, you will learn to howl, at least. Samira asked a question. You could say so, the guardian answered. Though behavior doesn't have to be learned from a certain person. Maybe they are influenced by television. There are always commercials and propaganda, and people take this as a guide. Or, for example, a person is under the influence of lower emotions, envy, jealousy, resentment. They are very much carried away by that. Then they serve these negative emotions. They are their slaves, constantly giving them all their energy and all their time. So you should always think, what influence am I under? What am I channeling through me? What is controlling me right now?
Master, what about when you are torn by these influences? Vadim joined in the conversation. For example, you just decided to pray and be in grace, and then suddenly someone said something offensive. Your soul is torn apart, either to start taking offense or to exaggerate that offense.
Yes, it often happens that these two influences come together in a person, confirmed the sage. A person must make a choice each time. Which influence will they prefer? To exaggerate an offense and throw it away, or to yield completely to a grudge and torture themselves for months to mock themselves with that grudge? You have to think, which influence is better? Which influence do I need to choose to make myself feel good? What do you choose? Another of the sage's questions was addressed to all the students. The answer could be given by each of them, not in words, but through their own choices made at every moment of their lives.
There are many influences, the guardian of knowledge said, summing up the rich spiritual conversation. If you have chosen the highest influence, you can become a mentor afterwards. It is the way when a person will abide in the sublime emotions, receive great understanding, gain light, and pass all this to people. If a person decided to do this, chose this path, then they become an organizer, then a mentor. If they have chosen worldly influences, to be offended, to be envious, to listen to TV, to be a victim of commercials, then the way to become a mentor will be closed. The students' eyes shone with understanding and enthusiasm. It was now that they had made their next choice. They were ready to continue on the spiritual path, to experience sublime emotions, and to move towards God. The sage smiled and, sending the energy of unconditional love to his students, began to recite a spiritual poem. In the twinkling sunset I have seen the day off in prayer, the mighty surge of tidal waves. I prayed the day away, and the tide was rolling. I'm purifying my heart, and I'm cleansing my soul away from passion and lust in the caves of the grave silence. I wish to sing the praises of the holy God to the heavenly hall of the Lord. I wish to pass through the ages and come to him from afar. I wish to come to him from darkness and misery, where we are tormented by our sin, where we have let ourselves be slaughtered by vices, giving our souls to them, the non-believers and slaves of debauchery, in the midst of their unquenchable passions, the fast livers and profiteers. But the price they have to pay is waiting at the door of the grave. In the twinkling sunset I have seen the day off in prayer, the mighty surge of tidal waves. I prayed the day away and the tide was rolling.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.